Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. Super Thunderbird by David Bill Verhind is an extraordinary new book about one man's sighting of a giant bird-like creature that David named Super Thunderbird. The book is the story of his encounter. It all started as a normal day on the road for David in his 18-wheeler big rig, but this day turned out to be anything but normal, and a day he would never forget. A real-life encounter with a raptor-like creature from the age of dinosaurs, an era that never really ended. David, or Bill Verhines, had experienced academic success, journalistic success, even charismatic success. In this single powerful volume, he devises a way to understand everything in terms of life-satisfying worldview. Now, having drawn the attention of a startling cryptid companion in the process, Bill wishes to share his perspective with the church, with family, friends, neighbors, and any companion who might listen, be that companion cryptic or otherwise. And David Bill Verhines, author of Super Thunderbird, joins us on This Week in America. David, welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here and share this incredible story. I know it sounds, so incredible, and it's really, pushing the envelope of belief, but it did happen, and I'm very happy to start sharing it with the public.
I'm glad you used the word incredible. I was trying to find one. This is such an incredible, it's a fascinating, illuminating story, and I'll give you all the information on the book and all of that as we progress through the conversation. But David, to start off, let's talk about the general breakdown, your personal background, and the book. Lay the foundation for what you're going to tell us.
Yes, I've got kind of a lengthy lead into the my background, which then shows the general background of the book. Although I was born in California, I moved to the Midwest when I was 1 year old. I was raised in a big Midwestern family. I had two older brothers and three younger sisters, so you can imagine what's coming up there. Obviously, we refer to as the Brady Bunch. And my symbiotic here is Bobby Brady, played by actor Michael Paul Lookinland. And when you see him interviewed on shows, he seems enamored of the TV sets and the whole idea of a TV production. If there was any kind of psychology done on a placement in the family, there might be some similarities, quite a few similarities between him and myself. You could call me David Lookinland Verhines. What I saw on July 17, 2018, around 8 p.m., give or take a few minutes, was something that I call in the book an odyssey. It was an odyssey scene, an odyssey figuring it out, but it was really an odyssey. Grew up in a kind of a latitude parallel with John Mellencamp from Indiana to where I was at in Illinois there, and I learned to fear Jesus in a small town. I got saved when I was 7 in an evangelical context. I committed to full-time Christian service when I was 17, and I went to the college and seminary of my denomination and did quite well in these institutions. When I was going through seminary in Fort Worth, Texas, I worked in the editorial department of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram for many years while I was going through, and a little bit afterward. I think God used this training in a major metropolitan newspaper with my conservative Bible training to kind of groom me for future projects. After the newspaper and seminary in 1990, I found myself at the St. Louis Vineyard Christian Fellowship with Minister Dr. Randy Clark, who was mentored by John Wimber, a professor at Fuller Theological Seminary, the founder of the Vineyard Church Movement, and a former manager of the Righteous Brothers Band. Dr. Clark also was from the Mount Vernon, Illinois area where I grew up. In January of 1994, he would travel to Toronto, Canada, at the Airport Vineyard Church there, it's later renamed, and God's use of him there would produce something called the global phenomenon called the Toronto Blessing. Among the tremendous outpourings of the Holy Spirit at that time was the gift of spontaneous laughter. I was to lead a Bible study group at the church around that time, and it came on me while I was leading, and everybody in the group got it. So I know it's a very refreshing experience, and it's something that is real. Yeah. A prominent figure at the church of that time was a former police officer who would later become the pastor of the church after Randy Clark, Dr. Clark, went into more itinerant ministry with his giftings there from the Lord. But he made a comment to me one time, and he said, "When the Lord releases your ministry, it will be like a 747, what was actually the wingspan of this Super Thunderbird." A little bit before that, and I'm working up into the words of knowledge on that Super Thunderbird, but a little time before that, I was in a group of about six people, and we were praying for Dr. Clark before his trip to Toronto. And I put in the book, there are words of knowledge / prophecy, and there's of impressions, and then there's wiring. I call it the wow equation, and I go into quite a few templates, and it gets a little involved on my perspectives on things. But I think it relays, you know, basically how I'm relaying truth in the book. But I saw, when we were praying for him, I saw a flower pot that was wilting, and Dr. Clark readily shares his feelings at the time right before that, his massive use, God's massively using him for that global outpouring. And the flowers wilted a little bit more, then they came to strong life, and fireworks shot out of them. You know, that's kind of a, but, you know, then you've got books on the subject, you've got a Wikipedia entry, you've got all kinds of knowledge of that out, you know, outpouring. And here this, you know, I saw that in a word of knowledge right before that was going to happen. But anyway, one of these words of knowledge has to do with the size of the Super Thunderbird at 50 feet by 220 feet. And actually during that time, I had a series of words of knowledge about the natural global phenomenon called the Ring of Fire. And a week before the Kilauea volcano eruption in Hawaii on May 17, 2018, I had a word of knowledge that there was going to be a volcanic eruption in Hawaii. This was mixed with other words of knowledge that produced the Ring of Fire concept. And God would use some of those themes like the, you know, the 50-foot volcano, the lava, to peg the size of the Super Thunderbird. I know it sounds a little crazy, but when you get into that kind of realm of frequency on the Kingdom of the Christian Triune God, it starts making a lot more sense.
Yes.
So in the book, there are five major themes. There are two major themes and three minor themes. The two major themes are the ones that most people will be interested in and the major reason for the book, and that is credible science and cryptozoology. But interspersed throughout there too, and especially in the appendix, are three minor themes of Christian life and living, Christian political theology, and conspiracy. Fortunately or unfortunately, I was a post-colleague of sorts with a late and great figure in conspiracy understandings, Jim Mars, who worked for a time at the Fort Worth Star-Telegram.
It's such a fascinating story, and I think we've got their attention. I will direct you to Amazon, the usual places, for a copy of Super Thunderbird by David Bill Verhines. That's V as in Victor, E-R-H-I-N-E-S, if you're Googling. David, in addition to what you mentioned, what else makes you think this large bird was 50 feet by 220 feet?
Okay, almost all cryptozoology books mentions that when you see things in the air, it can be disorienting as to the proper size. There is an example that I use in the book on an Alaskan sighting where many people saw it, and some people said 14 feet and some people said 30 feet and many points in between. There's probably a big note of contention in my book with my first guest of the Super Thunderbird to the Pennsylvania Game Commission. I included the correspondence with these emails in the appendix of the book, and Kirk's Reviews makes mention of this disparity. The first I saw it, and I knew something was really odd, and I felt responsible to report it. I knew that to call the police might have been a little overboard, and I might have looked a little crazy myself, you know. So I decided just to start communicating with the Pennsylvania Game Commission, and I kept it a little above average, as Kirk's Reviews had said. And then a couple of days later, I tried to up the ante in it and thinking through it and giving some options in it. About a year later, when I decided to sit down and write, I realized that there was a wife of a sheriff's deputy and a sheriff's deputy himself in the late 1960s and early 70s that saw a 75-foot wingspan Thunderbird in Pennsylvania. So I sat down to write the book at 65, 15 feet by 65 feet, And I was going to give this note. I was going to say you stand an 80% chance of being double that, 60% chance of being three times that, 40% chance of being four times that, and a 20% chance of being five times that. I was really disoriented, and I knew it was super huge. And then I had the word of knowledge, and it all made complete sense. I started with the 50 feet on the body and not the talons, because talons make it a little longer than that. And when we get into discussing cattle and bull mutilations a little later, you're going to need this 50-foot long vacuum in order to, you know, suck in one or several cows and bulls. You know, you can go into the book on this, but I also go into a rather long and some would say amateur discourse on the theory of a euphemism of an anthropomorphous mother nature who must please energy in the conveying of matter in our universe or multiverse. And when you get into the habitable zone, mother nature must please energy with a size and volume scramble on organic matter. And so the size and volume scramble is a top end project. And my Super Thunderbird would be a top end size in fauna. On the credible science end of things, I make mention in my book that the 220-foot wingspan is about the extent that our human aerodynamic engineers can go on a single-body flying plane. We run into the same limitations that Mother Nature eventually runs into. I started studying science around this issue and have emailed several biological thermodynamic experts. Since it was quite a while ago that I studied science, I was unaware of the formulas that connected the laws of thermodynamics with the laws of biological thermodynamics. And my guess is some supercomputers made some of those, you know, to make those connections. So I'm looking for the reasons why our aerodynamic professionals and now Mother Nature would run into a barrier based on math out of these two areas. I also might look for solutions in the macro areas of molecular biology, biology, evolutionary biology, and several other related fields. I have the potential of getting a hard and fast math equation to this, what I call colloquialism. Okay, and that is because Mother Nature swings for the fences, she plays the ball game. In other words, we have a lot more smaller organic matter than we have of the very largest organic matter. But it appears, and ultimately it's going to be based on the law of thermodynamics, but it'll pick up stuff that may give it more definition or almost entire definition in other areas. So still working on this hard and fast math equation to what I saw. But my Super Thunderbird complements the equation of a size and volume scramble that we know about in the flora end by the size end in the redwood and the volume end in the sequoia. In complementary fauna, we see the volume end in the marine mammal blue whale. And I'm claiming that we now see the complement size end in the dinosaur Super Thunderbird. And I might be able to produce a hard and fast math equation to why this is so.
It's just such a fascinating journey, and I'm just absorbing it all. And you'll have the full story in David's book, Super Thunderbird, by David Bill Verhines, V-E-R-H-I-N-E-S. Let's talk about the location. What makes this area, the area that of the sighting that you saw the creature, so appealing to such an enormous bird?
Yeah, this and the idea of the science of a size and volume scramble really compelled me to write the book. There are many details that I go in on how I actually figured out the mile marker. I'm a professional enough driver. I know right after the sighting, or pretty close after the sighting, because, you know, I was a little disoriented. I saw mile marker 53.7, and I got a snapshot of that too later on. I think a typical brain anomaly is when you see something of this uniqueness, you kind of, all your sight goes absorbing into this subject that you are viewing. And so I actually zoned out on anything that was not the Super Thunderbird, and I do not remember the buildings in the area. So I went back to try to figure out where I saw this at, and I thought there's a big valley at the 49.5, there's another big valley at the 50.5, and I was saying, well, it probably was around there. But when I did that on Google, I saw something called the Gray Towers Historic Mansion, owned by James Pinchot in the late 1800s. I finally realized that I'd seen the Super Thunderbird along mile marker 52 and 53, and I was right about looking at it pretty immediately at 53.7, because that gets ingrained with you after 25 years of trucking. and that I zoned out on the buildings that were in the area. But I'm so glad I got confused, because the actual area along I-84 brought up the backstory with James Pinchot and the Great Towers Historic Mansion. With my journalistic proclivities and training, I put together this story, and I actually put it in the book, and I think it's pretty solid. This area may have been built as a multi-mile radius as a bait box for Thunderbirds. I actually had another word of knowledge about a current living person that could be helpful here, but I'm kind of keeping it confidential until we can see how this thing's going. But I'm alleging that James Pinchot built a Nile River-like setting on our American Delaware River for the attraction of Thunderbirds. His crew may or may not have known that they could go into the Super Thunderbird size. But I have seen it now, and I know that they can. So however this all works together, you know, we're looking at it along those lines. So,
and I'll take a second here. David Bill Verhines, our guest on the program, talking about his book, Super Thunderbird. For a long history, of sightings of giant birds, oversized wingspans in the U.S., most referred to these flying creatures as Thunderbirds. What David encountered on that interstate highway that we're talking about was so enormous, he uses the term Super Thunderbird. So as David is talking about Thunderbird and Super Thunderbird, just a little bit of context there. I want to go back to something you mentioned a second ago. What is the Super Thunderbird's relevance to the cattle and bull mutilation since the mid-1960s? Also, you talk about a relationship possibly with the Silver Bridge collapse in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. I remember this back in 1967.
Yes, I think both those subjects are brought into sharper focus by my sighting of this Super Thunderbird. Here's a possible scenario that I mentioned in the book. The mother and father of this Super Thunderbird was seen and recorded in Pennsylvania around the 1960s and 70s. The Gateway Arch, put in the middle of our country, serves as an aphrodisiac in the mating of these birds, and you know, professionals can tell us why that is so. So this in turn produces the Super Thunderbird in the middle 1960s. And this corresponds with the global increase in cattle, bulls, and other animal mutilations seen around that time. And I believe just this one bird is doing it. Whenever one of these superbirds comes on the scenes, it causes a disorientation and panic among the regular Thunderbird population, the ones they go from the Eagle class to the Single Blast and Thunderbirds. And then, as I mentioned in the book, and it, you know, you can follow that line of reasoning, that is my thesis, to the Double Blast of the Evolution Expedite Double Blast. This mood of disorientation among the Thunderbird population can prevail for quite a time after the threat, like at a zoo. So around 1890, the Tombstone Arizona Super Pterodactyl, which by the Library of Congress saved article on that event, says that pterodactyl was 92 feet by 160 feet, which represents a single blast off the already large pterosaur and its genera into pterodactyl and pteranodon, and there's over a couple of hundred more genera, but those are the more common ones. Okay, now this around that time led to disorientation on the normal Thunderbirds, leading to attacks and abductions as seen around that time, even past the point when the super bird supposedly perishes. This was seen in the 1890s Webster County, West Virginia accounts of attacks and abductions, and before that time in the account of the abduction of Jimmy Kinney in Mississippi. There is a well-done internet article on the similarities between the Mothman and the Thunderbird, and it's endorsed by Lauren Coleman. So let's take that this is maybe a correct association. So then when my Super Thunderbird came on the scene in the middle 1960s, it caused a Thunderbird bird flap instead of a people's flap. When the people start reporting in newspaper and you get all that, then that's a people's flap. But this is a Thunderbird bird flap around Point Pleasant, West Virginia. Cattle and bull mutilations were seen in that area at that time. Sometimes large objects like trees are crushed in this struggle. So let's just hope it did not land on any bridges there.
Oh, yes.
I think it's nocturnal and stealthy, but it may have taken a while to really get good at that full nocturnal and stealthy, and it went through an immature period. Or the, you know, and the Thunderbirds might have gotten a little more used to it to go in and out. But I do believe it was instrumental in the famous Lawndale, Illinois attempted abduction, with panic among the Thunderbird population at that time as well, too. So the Thunderbird, that my Super Thunderbird, could also be behind the current times Illinois People's Flap and Thunderbird Flap too, because they're seeing the Mothman, and of course then now the Association of Thunderbird around the Chicago area has mentioned in Terror in the Skies documentary by Small Town Monsters.
You know, this is, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. You know, obviously there's a lot of overlap here between cryptozoology, incredible science, and cryptozoology.
Yes.
You know, I think we have several key parts here. The size and volume scramble that that we see in the biological area that I am bringing up, and the cattle and bull mutilations that we continue to see there. And again, I paralleled the Thunderbird and the Mothman. And, you know, that brings it into a closer science perspective. But I think as logical Americans, we need to look at the solutions that are being posited now for the cattle and bull mutilations. The chupacabras are often mentioned, but logically they'd have to be too numerous and they would definitely leave tracks. What we've seen around these mutilations are no tracks and no blood. I think you would have to have at least a 50-foot long vacuum to pull this kind of suction off. Aliens are mentioned too, but unless we've got some fetish aliens, yes. I don't think they need that much cattle and bull guts. A religious cult is also mentioned, but I don't think they could be as consistently efficient as we're seeing around these scenes. With the number of people that would be involved, I think it would be easy to record their presence in some way. And again, there are generally no tracks left. There's one account where a rancher who was witnessing this event could not even see what was happening. He went back and forth several times and also into his home in the course of these mutilation events. I said that my Super Thunderbird in the book could probably gauge the eyeballs of any set of eyeballs within a 5 mile to 100 mile radius. It comes in extremely fast, does its thing, and then moves out just as extremely fast. You could literally turn your back for a few seconds and miss it. It's pretty scary stuff. I think we could have a variation on the movie, A Quiet Place.
There. Oh, yes, yes. Okay.
And the official project on animal mutilation suggests that there are there could be a large bird of prey. However, I don't think anybody seriously considers this because the option in size could not have been conceived of properly to understand how everything gets done with that kind of large bird. It just, you wouldn't conceive of something that huge. Now we can with my Super Thunderbird sighting. And if you want to talk logic, I think it's the most logical explanation.
Boy, there is so much here, and the time is going by so quickly. I'm going to take a little while longer. I got a couple. I got a bunch of questions, but we don't have 4 days to do this, so I'm going to move it along. There's so much I want to talk to David about. The book is Super Thunderbird by David Bill Verhines. V as in Victor, E-R-H-I-N-E-S. You'll find the book at Amazon. Link onto our website, thisweekinamerica.us, and there's a website that I'll have David give us before we wrap up the program tonight. How do you make a connection with this Super Thunderbird, which you call the largest bipedal event in all of human history, with your Christian worldview?
Okay. Again, I've got, I guess when I get into that stuff, I got a lot to say. So I got a little bit of a lead in answering that. But on the largest bipedal event in all of human history, last month I was in Chicago O'Hare Airport, and I kid you not, I was getting on at gate B8, that's gate B8, and lo and behold there, on loan from the Field Museum of Chicago is a replica skeleton of a bronchiosaurus standing over 4 stories high and 75 feet long. I put in my book that the largest dinosaur was the Argentinosaurus. The bronchiosaurus was only slightly smaller than the Argentinosaurus. So they are very similar in size, but they would have much more volume than my Super Thunderbird. But size-wise, my Super Thunderbird is bigger. I asked someone in an email if I should correct the tour guide at some time there. But but I've also had an up-close and personal sighting of 2 black bears around this sighting in Pennsylvania, and also a flock of about 10 red-winged blackbirds that attacked me in the South Midwest. They are really, it's kind of like the Grizzly Man movie and then also the Birds movie at the same time. I just wonder what they'll call my Super Thunderbird if it ever comes out in the movie.
Yes.
Now, in the book, I go into most cryptozoology books use the term Thunderbird to mean all Thunderbirds. I try to say the Thunderbird means the eagle class of birds. And then the when I talk about the pterosaur, like the super pterodactyl, that's a pterosaur. And then if they were unclear about what it meant, I would say a large cryptozoology bird. And I believe that then the Eagle class goes into the single blast of the Thunderbirds, and then the Evolution Expedite double blast to the Super Thunderbird. So to say, and that this Mother Nature was ready to start doing it during our time coming in as Homo sapiens. So you could quibble about the semantics of it being the largest in all of human history, but one of the things that I allowed my illustrator to do, and you know, she had to get motivated because this was quite a remarkable sight, but I allowed my illustrator to use a fossil that looked a lot like the cartilage notches. If you look at that illustration on the Super Thunderbird, especially pose four, there's a fossil of current times that's smaller than that, but looks similar to that. And it's a real stumper because it's dated to modern times. Now I have the solution here. I was gonna say this bird is very terrestrial, and I want to do that. But a few weeks ago, I spotted a somewhat rare red-headed woodpecker in my backyard in Illinois, and it had white and black wings, and it had a very sharp line of demarcation between the white and the black, and this line went perfectly midway on the wings. I think a little birdie is telling me that maybe I should specify, I mean, it's kind of a weird event, that there was a sharper line of demarcation between the black and the white there. And I took the black to be the feathers, and the white was the start of the cartilage notch. It almost looked machine made. And I could have made a change like this, but the illustrator was inspired like that, and it was real close enough. And also, the first secondary flight wing was almost like a uniform filament fountain that you would buy in a gift shop. I wanted to stay away from both these phenomena because I, you know, the subject of aliens wasn't coming in my picture that much. But, you know, with this sighting of this redheaded woodpecker, you know, I didn't want it to start pecking on my head. I'm going to mention that because I may have upset the large Big Daddy bird alien that helped start some of the ancient Egyptian society with bird head figures that we see there. But that also brings up the subject of the human head, and I was leading up to that, has a chambering a bipedal phenomenon that is the brain in two hemispheres. And this is the subject of a left brain right activity and right brain left activity phenomenon. It sort of gets technical, but I call this a phenomenon in a biblical sense, the knowledge of opposites / knowledge of opposing forces realm, and I believe that's the realm that we live in. I have been working on these concepts for several decades. I feel like an alien cult may have started in on our planet through the Great Pyramids, or more likely a terrestrial group of tribal leaders came up with a plan to manipulate these two hemispheres of our brain. The Christian faith has been accosted into this scheme somewhat. There are both good points and bad points to the accostation, and my goal throughout the remainder of my life is how I may elaborate on how to move it into an entirely good situation. I do not think it was a coincidence that I saw the largest bipedal event in all of human history and have made these connections to the bipedal / bi-hemisphere human brain. So I elaborated quite a bit in the book on these concepts because I felt God allowed me to see this Super Thunderbird in order that I may start introducing some of these concepts that I have been working on for several decades. And then I included them in my, a lot in the appendix. You know, I put in the book that love was in the air for the mating of the parents of my Super Thunderbird back several decades ago. And I think it's safe to say that conspiracy is somewhat in the air in a major metropolitan newspaper, especially a setting that may have partially inspired Jim Mars and some of his viewpoints. I started in with some of my viewpoints right after the Toronto Blessing in 1995 with the St. Louis Vineyard. I was rather obsessed to try to develop these, and I actually developed something over time that I started in 1995 that could work in conjunction with a major conspiracy book, some say the Cadillac of conspiracy books, that came out in the year 2000 by Jim Mars. I will be introducing these parallels in a major theological set coming out in about 15 years, but I lightly touched on them here. And I feel a real sigh of relief rather than more of a nervousness for having included a partial version of this conspiracy. And the subject of cryptozoology does cross into pseudo-history, pseudoscience, and conspiracy, so it all felt like a partial appropriate time. So.
I'm going to take another minute here. I want to ask you one more question, and then we will give you all of the information. David's got a website that they've been working on. He'll give us that information. I'll spell out David's name so you can Google, get all of the information. But do you think other people have actually seen this Super Thunderbird?
I really hope so. This is a hugely important question to get answered by myself. I put on the website, at the bottom of the website, if you have had any kind of similar experience, please respond. As you know, we're hearing a lot about UFOs lately.
Yes.
And now since the government has slackened some of the understandings on UFOs or UAPs, especially pilots who've seen them are more talkative. A lot of people who may have seen my Thunderbird would be in professions where full acknowledgement of such a sighting could be a career ender. pilots, NASA personnel, ship captains, et cetera. People who excel like this are very conscious of career enders. So when I introduce it now, hopefully I've opened up the door to maybe sharing. If you have seen this, it would be really hard for me to believe I'm the only one that has seen this. And I just messaged Ken Gerdhart today about this and said it may have been that, because I was the it was an old age romantic overshoot, because, you know, it's getting old and all of that, you know. So it, and I put there was about a 65% yes and a 35% no that a secretive agency has probably got monitors on this Super Thunderbird. However, that still leaves a large minority chance that I'm the only one with this kind of up close and personal observation. I must turn over every angle of this observation or find out for sure that it's being monitored by a secretive organization. Then I can rest easy, because I feel responsible as a human being to say I've seen this incredible event. I need to record it, and I need to be instrumental in finding out all we can about it. You know, if you started putting it out right now, you might get some help that says, well, it's kind of bogus and they might not be fully committed. But if I could find a fully committed group of people to turn over every angle of this thing and maybe possibly find it, because, you know, I think it could live to 65 or 70 by dinosaurs. And if it's, you know, in the late 50s right now, you know, or mid 50s, then, you know, we still have some time, but the clock is ticking on it. And I would really like to be instrumental in an inspiration to try to find out all we can about it. I did see it. It was so awesome and it was so majestic. And I think human society would just be really benefit by a full examination and a try at trying to find this thing. And I would be forever grateful if some competent team did such a thing.
You know, all of this is in David's book, Super Thunderbird, by David Bill Verhines. V as in Victor, E-R-H-I-N-E-S. You'll find the book, of course, at Amazon, the usual places. David, you just added a specific website. Give us the information on the website.
Yes, that we were actually able to get superthunderbird.com. That's all one word, superthunderbird.com. And you can pull up my professional author's website. It has links to a Kirkus review. It has links to a 60-second video. And we'll add more links as things come along.
Fantastic. And you can get in touch with David. I assume that's what you were talking about by going to the website. There's a contact link there as well.
Yes, there's a Facebook, Instagram, and email on it. And I would greatly like to hear from the public on it.
You're all over the place and want to have input. Again, Super Thunderbird, David Bill Verhines, our guest, book available at Amazon. His website is what, superthunderbird.com. It's very simple. I have that correct, right? I mean, it sounds so simple that there's got to be a catch to it. That's right.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
I'm surprised you were able to find that. Congratulations on finding that, superthunderbird.com. David, a pleasure having you on the program. Keep us posted as to how this progresses. We'd love to continue our conversation. And thank you for being with us.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
It is our pleasure. And once again, David Bill Verhines, the book is Super Thunderbird. Information on his website, superthunderbird.com. Of course, our website, thisweekinamerica.us. And we're back after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.